You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Nō mai hoki mai ki tēnei kaupapa kōrero or the Physics Room. Nō mai, whakarongo mai, whakatau mai. My name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. Welcome to episode 56 of Art, Not Science. In this episode, we share a talk between Jess Clifford and myself, an informal discussion from the day following the opening of the exhibition I'm So Into You with artists Leila Majid, Zhu Changping, and Dale Palfreyman, which is currently showing at the Physics Room. Jess, who is an independent curator from Te Whanganui Ātara, Wellington, and I co-curated this show, which developed from an earlier project of Jess's, to The Friend Who Did Not Save My Life, which was hosted by Enjoy Contemporary Art Space late last year. The title of the Physics Room show, I'm So Into You, is adapted from Kathy Acker and Mackenzie Walk, a book, I'm Very Into You, Correspondence 1995 to 1996, published by Semiotext in 2015, in which Walk writes, I forget who I am. You reminded me of who I prefer to be. This talk was intended as an introduction to some of the ideas within the exhibition, relating to desire, or even more specifically, to points of contact, physical touch, as well as more immaterial forms of connection with the spaces that we inhabit. Across these works by Zhu Chang, Leila, and Dale, our proposition was that the physical, desiring, apparently individual self is in fact inextricably related to other people and things, indebted, sticky, part of a recursive loop where the body and its environment continuously reconstitute one another. Importantly, in this understanding of desire, the idea of unknowability is primary. To want to know is not the same as having a right to access. Each of the works in I'm So Into You are particular, situated examples of how our physical bodies come into contact with the world, with architecture, materials, cities, and inherited histories. Evading the I and the you of the title, a clear singular subject does not take shape in any of these works. Rather, the overarching mode of address is collective or multiple. Here, I embodies a will to exceed the borders of the self as individual. The you is an accumulation of forces with the agency to reciprocate or to refuse. What emerges from this idea is an expansive ecology of desire in which touch and other gestures of contact are recognized as mutually transformative. How do you remind the body of new possible gestures? Asks author Banu Kapil in a recent interview. She's speaking about bodywork, a therapeutic practice in which tension in the soft tissue is released. But the question might also be considered in a more general sense. Thinking of the works in this exhibition, which contend with different forms of desire and its refusal or negotiation, there is a common impetus to come back to the physical body with renewed awareness. That is, to leave the exhibition space more alert to one's body, to your body, the ethics of its relationships to other human and non-human bodies in the world, its capacity for pleasure, and to be reminded that the body is always already a site of transformation. Enough preamble, onto the talk. Kia ora koutou. Thank you so much for coming for this talk. We just really wanted to use the time while Jess Clifford, who's a co-curator who actually initiated the show, was in Ōtautahi, so thanks for making it part of your day today. Just to introduce really briefly, I thought we'll start with this show is like the devil's spawn of another exhibition, so we want to go back to the show at Enjoy Contemporary Art Space, importantly that was sort of the mother, the generator of this project. So I'm going to hand over to Jess to talk about that a bit. I
saw the show, but I only heard about it when I was pretty much, was it already in place? No, when it was in development.
Yes, I think so. So the project Abby's referring to was an exhibition called To the Friend Who Did Not Save My Life, and I have, you know, some visual aids that are textural, I suppose, as opposed to actually visual, which was an exhibition framed around a 1980s novel by a French writer, Hervé Guibert, who describes, among other things, his diagnosis of AIDS and the way in which that the epidemic kind of ravaged his friend group in Paris at the time, which included Michel Foucault, who was sort of a kind of father figure, mentor to him. And he describes in sort of great corporeal detail how Foucault dies in his kind of last moments. And it became quite a sort of sensation in literary circles in Paris, primarily because it wasn't widely known that Foucault had had AIDS and had died from the disease. And he's sort of one of the first kind of public intellectuals in French culture to have been known to have died, suffered from AIDS, essentially. And part of the kind of thrust of the book is this sort of betrayal of Hervé writing about his kind of mentor figure. So the exhibition for
what... Is it betrayal?
Well, because in the sense that Hervé Guibert is publicising this part of Foucault's life that wasn't heretofore public. It's kind of, you know, his private death made public. So for that exhibition, I was thinking a lot about how, about works of art that refer to bodies but do not depict them in the way that a book might, or any kind of witnessing account or something, a literary account does, in the way that more visual art practice doesn't. So part of that show was Leila Majid's works, which you'll see in this room, and also a different work by Dale. I think part of thinking about that exhibition was works of art that relate to bodies through sort of trace and touch, and how the figure of Hervé Guibert was this kind of framing device, but kind of an absence at the centre of the show. And I think the way that Abby and I then developed conversations that turned into this kind of iteration were, for me, in part, what happens once you lose that kind of central force. So how do you build a kind of, what are the forces or tensions that you can create through other artworks that would fill that zone in that similarly generative way?
And I think really early on, we talked about like what happens when you, I think we're both like readers and like really are a lot informed, I'm a lot informed by like narrative, particularly autobiographical, what happens when you kind of decouple experience or decouple a project from the idea of like the text as being the core of it. For me, that's quite a scary proposition in a way. I'm always like, oh, text. Oh yeah, that's like this anchor point for me. But I was like, what if this absence we're talking about is actually putting more emphasis back on like immediate presence or physical presence. The body is like a way to understand the world and like to kind of, says in the text, so in the text, there you go, to understand the body is like part of this recursive loop in the world where you are in constant kind of relationship with the environment and it's forming you and you're in turn affecting it. What if there's not this kind of like third, which I think I often treat a text as, to like release the show from that original framing. I think a person actually, or an artwork that immediately kind of was really apparent in the absence, was when Jess mentioned to me Charlotte Prodge's work, which was shown within the first, the show to enjoy it. And this is an artist I was like also really interested in and then like had a small amount of contact with. And so it's sort of, I think for me, that was like the first link. Like things always have that relational moment where you're like, oh, something familiar amongst this kind of like idea that's being presented, you know, in email form. You look for that kind of point of connection. That works not on the show, but that was a person in between us or something, an artwork that I think brought us kind of close, like speaking about that work in particular. I don't think Charlotte Prodge would know that, but it's kind of, that was the point of connection.
Genealogical, both in the way that we both thought about the work and then its kind of next step into different projects. And
you are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Yeah, Yeah, so just to recap on what Jesse had, like, sort of spoke about this absence, and we're like, what if that's actually a presence of the body, which again kind of iterates sometimes into immaterial connections. Like, I don't think the body is a purely physical entity, that's why might we understand it. So it dematerialized really quickly then, as well as you can see in this room.
You said that we were sort of trying to unhinge from textual sources, but I think the funny thing is that there are, of course, books throughout various facets of this show as well, particularly, well, the title, which perhaps you could start with.
Sort of a funny thing. I just had this book on my desk, and when Jess came down to school, I'm very into her. It's by Kathy Aga and Mackenzie Walk. It's like a correspondence over a year's time, I think, in the 90s.
By email.
Very, like, time-stamped by email. This kind of, like, absolutely intense relationship where I think the thing that happens is they meet and they have a few days stand, like a really brief physical and, you know, a relationship of that kind, and then they part and are living in different parts of the States, and they exchange this dialogue over a year, which does really boil down to that statement, like, I'm very into you. And I think I just liked that title. I actually found the book quite difficult, quite strange, that I was just, it's something that, yeah, it was on my desk, we kind of talked about, so there is, honestly, there's kind of a flippancy to that beginning, but I like that too, because I think shit can be so heavy when we're like, the body, and it's like, what body, whose body, like, what, it's like, the last thing you want to do is, like, disembody a conversation about the body, and for me, a statement like, I'm very into you is very relatable and very emotive, but it's almost got, like, a gut thing as well, it's like, into, so that's where the title is from. It's like an adaptation. I'm so into you. For some reason, we rejected that.
I liked the sort of intimacy or informalness of it. And I think where we've got to a little bit is thinking about modes of address and, you know, this kind of I and you and how the title functions to sort of bring them together with this force or passion or, you know, however you like to describe it. And then the book was funny because, you know, so much about it is meant to be this correspondence between these two people who, as you say, had a physical and also intellectual emotional connection. And for me, so much of the book is them kind of miscommunicating and misunderstanding each other. And this quite, you know, we were talking about it earlier, this kind of slightly aged technological kind of artifact of early 90s emails where they can't apparently see what the other person had said before. Yeah. So they're kind of like, I don't quite know what you said, but here is what I'm responding to. And the kind of mismatching of that, I think, is also a way into some of the works in the show.
Yeah, the idea of address, like putting something out there and just like when you're waiting for an email to come back to say, I too am very into you, or any other kind of reply. I always find it quite an interesting way to think about relationship with artworks and what they're putting out and what we're like have capacity to and what ways we have capacity to respond. I think pretty early on, particularly thinking about these works, I started to think about the refusal of desire as well. Like, what if the reply is, that's on you? Or what if the reply is a rebuttal, a rephrasing in a way that doesn't, it's not the desired response? And I went into this kind of, particularly the thing that works like this, like you can just like materially see opacity. I'm sure a lot of you guys might be familiar with it, Edward Glisson essay, which is about the politics of opacity as a kind of strategic resistance to when a desire to know, like a colonial desire, can be extracted. It's like, I need to know everything about you. I'm so into you. I want. And it's a form of like taking. So Glisson talks about opacity as a way, as a like knowing active resistance. He's quite interested in that in one respect. But I think to really move to talking about the works a little bit and return a bit to this idea of inheritance, we look at Zhu Changping's work, which is the film work in the corner, that very directly deals with an inheritance, sort of queer forebear in a way, even though there's an element of like mismatch, it's like a difficult inheritance. And I think this is something I relate to a lot when you, you know, as a queer person, like seeking, you know, people and history that you can learn from, and you can be like, oh, that's what it was like at that time. That's someone that I can learn from if we, you know, destabilize a kind of linear understanding of history. Like, that's one of my people that I can identify with. And then you learn something kind of ugly about them as well, it's of the time, or it's not always easy to like find, there aren't these like perfect heroes out there for us. So Zhu Tang's work deals with a trip by Roland Barthes, a semiotician, a French philosopher, in 1974. As part of a whole group of French intellectuals that they basically published a journal, but at that time they were like super socialist and wanted to like identify, authenticate themselves as like militantly radical left people, like pro the Cultural Revolution in China. So this was going to give them the stamp of like being proper socialist. So Roland Barthes went along with them to China and did this tour that was very
stage managed.
Yeah, so it was sort of like that agent, the Chinese Communist Party, is kind of touring around these factories, like here's heavy workers, here's activities of like this productive state. And the writing, so at that time, Roland Barthes makes observations in a notebook, which is interestingly not published in his in his lifetime. I honestly think it is a private, and he knew it was a bit spit, like it's a bit like, he's just like, he talks about missing the flirting and salads of France. He talks about how, you know, he fails to find anything to stimulate his interest. But most interestingly, I think, in relation to this work by Zhu Tang, he talks about that he can't make anything of these people, but there's a degree, maybe I can read this, they have to be taken literally. They are not interpretable, he writes of the Chinese. He could not make anything of them. So this idea of, like, his desires unmet, he really wants to, like, understand and, I think ultimately, like, fold into a system of signs, like the semiotic linguistic system that he has, and be like, this is how I've interpreted the signs that I found in this sort of exotic place. He'd done a similar exercise in Japan that was very fulfilling for him. In China, he finds this, talks about having a glass, glazed wall, something, glass, something between him and the people, so he's unable to kind of get the meaning. He gets migraines, he feels very unwell, he stays on the bus a lot, his desires unsatisfied. These observations were published in 2009, and the work made by Zhu Tang, who was born in Hospital Changsha, which is in China near Shanghai, he basically returns to some of the observations made by Roland Barthes, and through just a walking kind of perambulation through his hometown, through Zhu Tang's hometown, I guess he reimagines, or he reclaims some of those observations that Roland Barthes makes. There's lots of fragments of conversations with queer friends of his, and many of the sites that he visits. So he goes to the queer bars right at the beginning, and his degrees of opacity in that film as well. It's shot on Super 8 and 16mm and then transferred to like a digital medium, but it's quite jumpy and grainy, and you almost like, you find yourself kind of, well, I find myself straining because I want to like see the dancers on the bar, but I think there's kind of some resistance there too. He traces a track kind of through the city, visiting various sites they think do have personal relevance to him, but also I guess like signify kind of queer architectures and sites, so gay sauna, and then there's a number of moments where there's an overlap between who's behind the camera and the subject in front of the camera when I turn and return the gaze. So I guess in our understanding, in the larger framing of that work, the idea is that he's refracting, replying, responding to old Mr. Barthes' kind of unsatisfied kind of act of consumption of China. And Zhu Tang wrote this cool thing. He said it was a difficulty when making the work to not be engulfed by the previous text. I found that quite interesting, like the idea of I'm so into you, like eat you up. Do you know? Like I've almost felt that feeling, but I'm like, there's a real, imagine being the person or being the subject of this kind of gaze. So it's a subtle work. We're talking this morning, like in a way, about that difficulty of inheritance idea, like when I read about the work, I was like, oh yeah, it's a big fuck you to Barthes because he came and, you know, like tried to, whatever, make something of this place and is unable to. Actually, when you watch the work, I feel a much more sense of empathy. Like, you know, like part of Barthes' desire was this kind of homoerotic desire that, as Zhu Tang's also a queer artist, and I think in a way he's like, yeah, relief. You know, like it's not a clear oppositional kind of position. I think it's actually quite a subtle one.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Particularly when we were discussing earlier, the empathy that I think you read in Zhu Tang's work with Roland Barthes also is this idea of trying to, viewing your hometown or kind of the difference between a sort of insider view and a kind of external guest or tourist. So, you know, Barthes was a tourist in China. China, and Zhu Chang is filming his hometown, but he no longer lives there. And, you know, the kind of how you frame a return through kind of visual knowledge or...
And body knowledge, like you go walking in your neighborhood and you're like, ooh, like, is it nostalgic or not? Like, you know, there's like quite a... Yeah, it is interesting. I feel like there's like the desire of Zhu Chang as well, who's like, you know, a diaspora subject that lives in Amsterdam at the moment. And this desire, like, you don't want to lose connection with your home as well. You see if something like home is a place I feel increasingly distant from or something like that. And talking about a recent return to the to that town, so I think that's a kind of undercurrent desire that runs through as well.
I mean, speaking from personal experience, I think it's one of the strangest things to think that your home is going, your home, your idea of hometown, your hometown is going to be the super familiar thing. And then after time and space and distance, and it's not, and you're like, I don't get it. It should be what I thought it was going to be. Which is a sensation I think is really at play in Layla's works. This sort of a sense of expectation or a kind of position of trace that's presented through the works, but then kind of equally with this kind of unsettling, kind of destabilizing quality. So this, the mirrored work behind you is a photograph that she took of her bathroom mirror after she'd taken a shower. And I think it's such a sort of collective understood experience, and we've put it kind of at the threshold of the gallery, hoping that, you know, that's kind of the first thing you see and you sort of expect to see yourself, because you look at it and you think, oh, I know that feeling, like I've done that before.
And just wipe it.
Yeah. And the way in which the surface of the work really, like, is almost like it really has steam on it in real life, even though it's a print. And, you know, we were talking earlier about some people came in and thought, oh gosh, I'm going to clear it off, you know. Speaking again to this kind of opacity of, there is this kind of a very sort of subliminal trace of the artist's presence within that work, but it's also, you know, the expectation that you're seeing yourself reflected. It's fantastic having it in this kind of daylight space, because it's going to get got quite like dappled green light on it earlier, and, you know, the shifting light in the evening was really beautiful.
I like this kind of mundane as well, like it's not, it's not a glam, or to me it's not a glam, but then it's like, it's just a mirror. I don't know, like it's just a, it's like the most obvious indecible kind of stuff which it could possibly be, but also there's no like naked body, there's no, none of those things that we like have seen on like the portraiture in the history. It's just like none of that, it's just like everyday portrait, maybe just 16, yeah. Sorry.
No, no, so I mean, is it a portrait of Layla, or is it us, or is it the steam? And I think that's the multi-fold nature of that kind of subject position is something that's super interesting with that work. These I love, and the crazy thing is they were in the Enjoy exhibition, and then when I got here yesterday, I was like, gosh, they look different. They've like, you know, they've really taken on a whole new life, and kind of they have this aliveness. So they're latex, and Layla lets them develop in her studio over a course of a few months. So all the kind of like latent fingerprints and traces of kind of skin and oil and sweat kind of come out of the material, which now, having been in Aotearoa since about August last year, they're now taking on kind of atmospheric traces of the gallery spaces that they've been in, both Enjoy and now here. So it's kind of indexical presence of both the artist and space. And the nice idea is sort of that they kind of have this, the material itself is very resonant with the kind of spaces that you might find latex. So both kind of on the sort of wellness sport end of the spectrum, Pilates studios, kind of massage, that kind of thing, versus the kind of more desirous spaces, sex clubs and nightclubs. And to think about how the body and or bodies interact in those spaces and what traces might be left behind on the works. So there's kind of like a head sort of rest shape that's emerged here. Lots of handprints down there.
I think that to me, they might be talking about spaces having skin too. So it's like there's a mutuality, if it's a word, and like that. I don't know, I always think about like how after openings, like playing the wall steps, because everyone's like leaning on walls and like eyeing on walls, you know, given any chance. And that's quite a funny thing to me that in galleries, which are a lot about, you know, we think like maybe too much about like relationship space, it's like not really a thing. It's not really like good, the right thing to lean on the walls. But it's just like we create this whole environment. It's like social and all of these things. And it's like, don't lean. So I sort of like that these invite the link, even though like, please don't lean on them. somebody did, you know. They definitely make me think of like once Dan Sanders, who's a bit into a curator, did a quite amazing on a show at a sex club. And there was so much furniture, like it really did. Yeah, as soon as I saw these, I was like, oh yeah, all that furniture, all that wiping clean, all that contact, like it's a whole thing. It's kind of cool, like, you know, even in relation to the object space show about the chair, I was like, there's so many more chairs than on that show, you know? So it's quite, yeah, it's quite cool. Like, furniture and buildings have this kind of, like, bodily or skin thing as well. And it's a meeting of skin to skin. It's not necessarily like this inert. We could understand it differently to, like, an inert, like, holder of our bodies. It's like, there's another body there, too, that has its own materiality. To talk to Dale's works. I think the kind of like Aki thing that has come through really strongly in all the conversations about that work was just a shift to away from the hierarchy of kind of the visual sense, just very dominant in a gallery and in lots of other parts of the world. I guess like seeing all the things you want to consume in capitalism, seeing the phenomena you want to steal in colonialism. So in this work, I think there's like a really strong emphasis on like the felt, the tactile, the haptic. Experience the smell, like so buzzing when I open up the gallery, it's like kind of thick in the air. This can be beeswax smell, and also the oral sense. So, you can, as you walk in, you can scan this code here. And collaborated Shallow Foresters made a beautiful cello piece that did you feel like you felt it inside your body? Like in the headphones, I was like, I'm a cello.
I've never done the best experience because my friends, yeah, not.
So I guess with that piece, so it's named The Loosener of Limbs, which comes from is a Sappho fragment reference. Sappho being the patron saint of the Sapphic lovers or the lesbian cult. So, and that's just one translation, obviously it wasn't written in English, but the loosener of limbs, the idea of like an erotic love or like an extreme desire through which you lose bodily autonomy is, yeah, I guess is in some way informing this work, would you say? It's not the cognitive sense that's primary, it's not the visual sense that is primary, it's tactility, it's smell, it's all those other, maybe we haven't even categorized them into like finite kind of sensory boxes. But those ways of knowing and understanding the world.
The sound piece is very vibrational. It's sort of taking reference from bee swarms, as I understand it. So it's sort of like, yeah, that kind of abstraction of that sound and how that kind of, yeah, vibrational quality can resonate within you as you're walking kind of along the works. And, you know, obviously handrail is a support system, you know, if you're, as you say, not thinking or acting through the visual kind of cognitive senses.
Yeah, so I encourage you to listen to that sound while you're experiencing that work and not looking at that work as well.
And unlike Layla's, it invites touch and we would encourage you to put, you know, have a feel.
just to return back to that title, I think a few times during, I was like, trying to write this, we wrote an extended piece which is in here which touches on some of these ideas, but Jess was said to me, like, so who's the I and who's the you, like, in this title, like, when you sort of map it onto the show, not to be too literal, but I was like, okay, who's the I, who's the you? And I suppose on one hand, I want to, like, be slippery and be, like, it's constantly shifting, and I do think it's a little different in each of the works. I think in Zhuchang, for example, I think he's writing to the idea of the I being Roland Barthes and being like, actually, I'm going to be the I in this work. Like, I'm going to be the protagonist, the narrator, the actor. So I think there is a kind of interplay there. But I kind of want to explore the idea of the I altogether and say there's like multiple forces at play in any like moment of desire. So it's like we reduce it to this idea of like, I'm so into you, but it's also there's like contextual factors that we can't actually articulate in those kind of words. So in a way, it's like, that's only the beginning. The statement, I'm so into you. It's actually, yeah, that kind of individuation of desire, I think, is like not what this show is about.
Material and environmental expansion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Without trying to deny the body's presence. Like, I had a few moments where I was like, but there's not enough bodies in the show. And I was like, okay, we've all got one. It's not wish, or I don't, certainly don't wish to kind of downplay their presence in the exhibition. But it's, yeah, I guess about desires and embodied experience.
That was Jess Clifford and myself speaking about the recently opened exhibition, I'm So Into You, at the Physics Room, which will be open every day, Tuesday to Friday, 11 a.m. till 5 p.m, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m, here at the Physics Room on 301 Montreal Street, Ōtautahi, Christchurch. The exhibition will be on until the 28th of March, closing at Easter. Further public programs for this exhibition will soon be announced, with all details on our Instagram and our website, physicsroom.org.nz, under events. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next month on Friday, the 15th of March, 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art Not Science. Ngā mihi o te wā.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, and the Crater Rim.